Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Welcome back to the First Cut Podcast. My name is Kyle Porter. I've got one of our usuals, Mark Immelman, is on the line. We've got a special.
Usual? I'm not usual. I'm extraordinary.
Well, I just mean you're a regular. That's what I should have said. We've also got... You got me all thrown off, Mark. I got this whole intro thing. We've got PGA Tour caddy Kip Henley on the line as well. We're going to talk to Kip today. He is currently on the back for Stuart Sink, previously caddied for Vijay Singh, Brian Gay, and Austin Cook. And if you're listening to this, you probably know him from Twitter, at Kip Henley. So, Kip, how are we doing today, man?
Doing great, boys. Good. Great to be on with you, boys.
What has the last 2 weeks been like? I mean, it's such a... You know, I think from a Mark and I see it from a media perspective. So we're just like, you know, I was watching the 2011 Masters final round with my wife last night. I'm just trying to consume any kind of golf that I can. What's it been like for you?
It's been kind of, you know, scary as much as anything because of not knowing the future. But, you know, as far as sitting around, God, I'm a pro at that. When I'm not caddying, man, I'm sitting somewhere. So.
Talk about a pro. I see you've been increasing your presence. Well, not that your presence on Twitter was not increased, but I see you roasting a few golf swings right now. Big guy, are you leading the trend or are you following Max Homa's lead?
Oh no, I was listening. I caught a lot of heat for copying Max, and Max is incredible what he does. But Kipper I was roasting golf swings 7 or 8 years ago, and I started in an airport, bored out of my brains, and I said, I had a big old layover. I said, send me some swings and don't get your feelings hurt. So Max, I don't know if Max ever saw me do it, but I did it a long time ago. But Max took it to a new level. He was awesome on there.
Okay, well, I'm going to do this now, and I'm doing this for my good buddy Kyle Porter, who is the chairman of the Jordan Spieth fan club.
You want
to go Jordan Spieth's golf swing right now?
Why do we have to always bring this up?
Why not?
It feels mean-spirited.
It's not mean-spirited at all.
I'm part of the Jordan Spieth fan club. I love that kid. And his caddy, me and Mikey are big bodies.
All right, we'll have a go.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to dissect him?
Give us your opinions on Jordan Spieth's game right now.
Well, here's the deal. And I even tweeted it out there, you know, like 3 weeks ago when they said something that were making this grip change. Man, for the last like year or so, I've been giggling with the players. I'm such a look at Jordan's grip. I mean, get close and look at it. His grip was just like a 20 handicappers. I mean, it had gotten just awfully weak and it's
way underneath. You're right.
Most of his right hand wasn't even on the grip. I go, how can they let him hold the club like that? It has to be. And they said they made the announcement, two or three months ago, hey, we're making a grip change. And I text Michael right away. I said, man, that's going to be the key to getting that guy back on the map. You watch.
So he seems like things are trending upward a little bit right now, right?
No doubt. But and I also tweeted just so I didn't throw rocks at Jordan. I'm a huge fan of Jordan and Mikey's. But I said the guy's a champion because of his brain, not his grip, but. Yeah. You have to have some tools to work with, you know, but the guy's a champion because of his mind and his putting and he'll be back. I mean, he probably could have come back with a crap grip, but it was looking really rough there for a bit, but this will be all positive for him. I look for him to have a huge closing summer here.
I'm curious about when you talk about, you know, discussing Jordan Spieth's grip, how much do you guys talk about players and where they're at and what they're doing and how much success they're having or not having? Is that a big part of the conversation or is it just kind of come up whenever?
It's mostly just with your buds. You'll talk about it. You'll talk about each player and their attitude and their crappy game or their good game. And occasionally you know, there's a few out there that just
Misery loves company, I guess, right?
So one of my favorite things to say, you know, when I finally gave up the you know, playing, chasing my dream and became a full-time caddy, and, you know, I started with Eric Axley for a few events, and then wasn't long into that, I got to move over to Brian Gay's bag, which was a huge blessing. But I would always be on the range. You know, I was still fresh off of giving up, you know, and I would be on the range and I would look down a lot. Like, I'd see Goitis down there, and I'd tell Brian Gay, are you telling me I can't beat that guy right there? Look at that. Because Goitis is a great dude, and this had crap. You know, he had 15 handicapper action, but he got it done, you know, and he putted like a genius. But when I first got out there, it was more of that. It's like, God, look how crappy that guy is. I can't beat him. Why is he out here and I'm not? You know, I tried hard with both hands for a long time before I finally gave it up.
Hey, Carl, I want to ask you this one too. That, I mean, you were a tremendous player. I mean, you still, I think in the Tennessee State Golf Record books, Kip Henley or Kelvin Henley's name there is at the top of all of them. Hey, I got to ask you this. So for some, you know, young player who's battling, who's like, well, maybe I'll go and caddy for a little while on the PGA Tour. I mean, how does one go about this? And what advice would you give to someone from that point of view?
Well, I got my standard line that I tell everybody. They, you know, they'll tweet to me or ask me in interviews, Kip, how do you become a caddy on the PJ Tour? I always say, fail at everything in your whole life. That's how I became one. But guys wanting to go caddy, you know, if you get a, I have club caddies ask me all the time, Mark, how do you become a regular tour guy? I want to caddy on tour, and I go, not really, you don't. I mean, there's probably 60 or 70% of us caddies live paycheck to paycheck. You know, you have that, you know, the top 30 or 40, 50% that they're making money, and then the top 10 are killing it. Mm-hmm. But, and you'll see a handful of caddies that stay in there, and they're always killing it. But then guys, you know, like I went in there with Cookie for a little while, and me and Brian were up there a lot, but I guarantee you half my caddy years, I've been at it 15 years now. Half of them, I stay pretty much paycheck to paycheck all the years I caddy, truthfully.
And the best advice you can give is find a good bag, right?
Find a great bag or don't do it. I mean, if you ain't, and I'll tell them also, how do you get to be a caddy on the PGA Tour? Have a friend make the PGA Tour now. That's pretty much, when I first came out 15 years ago, there was a lot of, you know, caddy changing. Guys would get in, get out, and move from bag to bag to bag. And, you know, guys could work the lot and have a chance of getting a bag. Not anymore. These guys, man, these caddies are too good at what they do, and they guard those bags with their lives now. And there's just, I mean, you'll see the caddies change. You know, they just had a little, before we went on break, there was some, you know, caddy carousel was going on pretty good, even a few of the top guys. But it was guys switching inside, no one coming from the outside and getting bags. Well, you know, very, very few guys come. You know, a few friends came in, and a couple of the Korean guys, that hurt the American caddies. One of the Korean guys, you know, they always wanted the American caddies, you know, I guess just to have the knowledge of the courses and everything. And then this last guy, I don't know who did it, but he brought his Korean buddy over and they won. So now I think all the Koreans are going to start chunking the American caddies now. I'm nervous about it, my buddy. So we'll see.
I want to go back to the Brian Gay thing, because you were on his back for quite a while, as I remember. And I think that, you know, I think fans look at somebody like Brian Gay and they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, he's fine. You know, he's okay. He'll pop up every once in a while. Explain to people, like, how good somebody like Brian Gay is to do what he does for that long a period of time, and how it doesn't really... I don't think that's reflected in the way it comes across either on television or how he relates to some of the bigger stars.
And Brian Gay is, what he's done is amazing. You know, when I worked for him, they say he's added some yardage now. He changed his golf swing, but man, he went into a 3-year tailspin chasing distance, you know. But when I was with him, we spent our first 5 years together with zero swing changes. But at that point in our career, I mean, he was rolling then. We had a great 5 years together, but I stayed with him off and on for 10. And what he does is amazing. When I was with him those first 5 years, he flew it. I'm telling you, you could stand out there at 249 yards and catch 9 out of 10 balls in your hat like this right here. I mean, dead straight, and he couldn't fly at 250. If it's 250, he had to have tailwind. He flew at 249. I know for sure. I watched it solid. So, but the guy's managed to keep his car for 20 years, and people have no concept of what kind of ball striker that guy is. I mean, it's a sickening. And if he's 80 yards and in with that sand wedge or that lob wedge, it's like me hitting 20 foot putts is the way the ball looks like it's going through the hole. He's dynamite, you know, and I've always said the straightforward pitch, he's the best that ever walked the earth on just a straightforward pitch. He was always just okay at like sending it way up in the air or, you know, bump and run. When he got creative, he wasn't as talented, but straightforward, right in front of you, tough pitch off a tight lie into the grain every time, money. So
he was pretty spoken greens as well, right?
Inside of 8 feet, he might be the best to ever walk the earth as well. I mean, you got to talk about him with Faxon, and they don't get mentioned because the guy flies under the radar. You know, I was lucky. I had 4 wins with BG, and I swear it's like every time he got a win, something major happened in the world, like not 9/11, but stuff, something like that. So he would win, and then no one's watching the tube. So that guy flies under the radar like crazy. People didn't know only the big giant golf nuts know who Brian Gay is.
so you talk about his ability to ball strike at that level. People don't really understand. Who are the guys that when you're out on the range, you're like, oh man, that's special. That's a different level of ball striking than everybody else out here.
Well, one of my favorite ones of all time to watch hit balls, there's 2 guys that come to mind immediately, Boo. And, you know, I worked for Boo for a little bit, and Boo's ball striking was sicko. And then Willie Mack, Will McKenzie. I mean, I used to love to watch that guy hit balls, man. He was really a special ball hitter. But anytime you're around the bigger guys like Tiger or even Ernie Els, man, you know what went underappreciated? You know, I'm with Stuart Sink now for like 9 or 10 events. That's somebody that's super underrated for his ball hitting. I mean, that guy, his divot's that far in front of his golf ball with a 6-iron. And, I mean, he gets that 4, 5, and 6-iron in his hand. I mean, all clubs, even his lob wedge. But that guy is money every time, right on the back of the ball. And I swear – he is, you know, I worked for VJ for like 5 events. That was hell on earth. But I worked for VJ for 5 events, and he was amazing out of fairway bunkers. But I'm telling you, Stuart Sink out of the fairway bunkers, I'd rather have him with a perfect line in the middle of the bunker than the middle of the fairway. He blows my mind what he does out of there's no miss hits, all solid contacts. He's not picking them or any. He's just nailing the back of the ball, you know. When I was such a bad ball striker, I would just – try and sweep it out of the fairway bunkers. Not him. He's got a divot and right on the back of the ball, and it's getting it when it's coming out of there. So Stuart Sink is a way underrated ball hitter.
You know, you mentioned Ernie Els there. I saw a video on Twitter today of his, I think European Tour put it out there, of his swing. And I mean, yeah, I just sat there and watched it on a loop for like 2 minutes.
Where may my children not go to heaven. I watched it. I bet I watched it 20 times right in a row, just like you did. Wasn't it beautiful?
It's incredible.
Hey, wait, I got to play junior golf against this dude. I've been singing way longer than you guys.
Oh, that's right. He's a South African boy. He's amazing, isn't he?
Hold on. I think that when we think about the Tiger era, we think, oh, how, like, what did Phil lose out on because of Tiger?
Right.
I think it's Ernie. I think Ernie's.
Ernie
I think
took Ernie's beaten.
Yeah. And I think I wonder what it looks like if you drop him into any other era. And I mean, he was amazing as it was, obviously won a bunch of majors, even in the Tiger era.
Right.
But man, his ball striking was just, it was a joke.
Kyle, yes, trivia for you. Hey, Kip, so you know, Kyle always lobs this trivia at me just in the blink of an eye. So be ready for this, okay?
I love it.
So in 2000, Kyle, Ernie Els did what in relation to Tiger Woods? What were his finishes?
Well, he finished second at Pebble.
All of them. He finished second all 4 times.
Did he finish second at all of them?
Yeah.
Did he really?
As far as I know, I mean, I'm sure I'm going to get some Twitter hate if he does. If he did. if memory serves me, although that's a long time ago.
I thought Jimenez or Miguel Angel finished second at Pebble, I thought.
He came up there, but Ernie was there.
Was he?
I think they might have tied for second there, actually.
You know what else, you know, what I always respect about Ernie? Ernie was the first stud in the era of, you know, Tiger. The first stud to go this guy's better than everybody else. You know, Colin Montgomery, he fought against it and tried to say, you know, he can be beat, and he got his tail handed to him a bunch of times. But Ernie was the first major gun to go, this guy is up here, we're down here. He bowed down to Tiger. I loved how he was respectful of what he knew. He just knew, good Lord, I can't beat the guy.
Yeah, they finished, Miguel Angel Jimenez and Ernie Els finished second at Pebble in 2000. They were both 3 over 287. John Houston was 4 over 288. Lee Westwood, Padraig Harrington, 5 over, and Tiger was 12 under.
And I've gotten slapped across my knuckles by our producer, Jacob, who said Ernie finished second in 3 of the 4, and the PGA finished down the field some. But the PGA didn't count it that year anyway, so that's fine.
The PGA didn't count that year? What?
What do you say? What's the which Masters doesn't count according to you?
Well, the 16 Masters was staged. That didn't happen. And the 16 PGA might not have happened either at Baltusrol. I remember one shot from that tournament, and it was Jason Day's eagle into 18 on Sunday. Because they played like 45 holes on Sunday. I mean, it was such a weird event. Anyway, we don't need to talk about this. What else you got, Mark?
I want to ask you, Kip, back to sort of the caddying thing. I mean, you've been so insightful with your anecdotes from the players. You know, player-caddy relationship is very important. I mean, you guys spend more time together than you do with your greenskeeper, your wife, as you call
her. That's right.
When do you know that, hold on, this might be getting a bit stale and it might be time to move along? Does the caddy get a sense before the player gives the axe?
Not every time, because I'll tell you a story about that, but... yes, it's this last time that, you know, I was with Austin Cook the last 2 years before at the end of last season. And, you know, his rookie campaign was dynamite. And we just missed making it to Atlanta. You know, he finished 36 or whatever on the year end money list as a rookie with a win. And then last year he took off our last season together. He took off the first 2 months of the winter with no golf and had his first child. And he came back out with snakes in his head, and we struggled for a great portion of the year. We were up there a few times and fade away, but still he was fully exempt. You know, we didn't even make the playoffs in last season. So we finished like 121 or whatever. No, it wasn't. It was 131 on the FedEx race. So we didn't even make the playoffs. So I'm home for 2 days and just, you know, I'm just got me a little break and can't wait to get started with it again. And then that call came and it said, Kip, I'm going a different direction. I was like, wow, okay. Thanks a million, buddy. I appreciate it. And I mean, I was grateful and handled it right. And I said, thanks for all you did for my family and everything. But I didn't see that one coming. So you don't always see it coming. But the relationship with the player caddy, I mean, Mark, people talk about, you know, as you do yardages and this guy's good on the greens or whatever, you know, but there's nothing that a caddy does is more important than having his guy be mentally strong. And that's what we do. That's what the best caddies do. They help their guy forget about the bad crap and help him go forward and try, you know, you try and instill as much confidence in them as you can and say the right things. And you know, you lay awake at night thinking, what can I do to help my guy be more confident tomorrow? That's what the best caddies do, in my opinion.
Do you find that you talk about instilling confidence and building guys up mentally? Is that more important on a Thursday when you make 3 bogeys on the front, or is it more important on a Sunday when you're in the middle of it, when you're in the middle of potentially winning a tournament?
Fair question, but I think it's more important when you're awake. It's always the most important thing. Always, every day. Mondays, traveling. You know, when you've had that bad finish on Sunday and you send them a text, dude, hang in there, we were close to here and you just missed here and that happened, you got a bad break, everything's great, you know. Trust yourself and keep doing the process. But this game is maddening, you know. It's a game of hard knocks. For every one good thing that happens to you in the game of golf, 10 kick you right in the tail. You know, it's not even close to being even. You get way more bad breaks than you get great breaks, it seems, when you're playing golf. And like I say, you know, you can miss 2 or 3 cuts in a row and then win the following week. It's just, you got to be resilient and take the body blows.
So it's an incredible thing, you know, me getting to be out there on the fairways and watching the relationships. And and just the different styles of individuals too. You talk about motivation and such, and I don't think the folks on the other side of the ropes realize, you know, because when you got a lead group on TV, you get the sound coming through the mics of the conversations and such, and some guys like your buddy Michael, he's just a sounding board, and Jordan's going a mile a minute, and Michael's just nodding and going ahead. But some guys like yourself, I mean, I've seen you in a young guy like Orson Cook's ear in the biggest way, just on his shoulder, on his wing, whispering to him all the time, you know, you got this. And a lot of it, to your point, is uplifting of your charge, basically.
Exactly. That's what the best guys do out there, no doubt. But, you know, being with Stuart, he's such a smart cat. I just say, I'm a yes man now more than I've ever been in my career. Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah. Butterfly, that's like 180 and let it roll 4 yards. Yes. I say yes a lot to my guys. So.
I gotta ask you this one as a follow on. There are those situations, and I've caddied some. I try to avoid it because it's not the best job. But, you know, it's a difficult job. It really is. But then the player looks at you and the player is confused, and you get that face that says, okay, what's the call? And he's back and forth between something, and you make the call, and he goes with it, and he's over the golf ball. And I remember so many times going, sweet Jesus, please let this thing carry the front. You know, you know that sensation? Talk about that stuff.
All the time. You know, there's certain tee balls, you know, that are in their heads, you know, that they've struggled with in the past. And I mean, you try and deliver the most confident, cocky, you know, pro, you know, just aim it right there to bunker. Your ball goes where you aim it. Just hit it to bunker, full trust. I mean, you're trying to say the right things, and then you walk over by the ball, and you're like, please come down somewhere out there where I can see it hit the ground.
Ball's in the air, and you're like, please be right.
It's crazy. And the money's gotten so good now out there. I mean, if you can get a guy, get up around that lead now, man, it gets exciting.
Yeah, for sure. There's, especially at a, you know, the thinking about the Players Championship, which obviously didn't get completed, but $15 million purse. I mean, it's crazy how much money has changed over the years. And is that the biggest difference than when you first started caddying? What are the big changes that you've seen over the last 15 years of caddying?
The biggest change I've seen in 15 years is the health, the athletes coming to the game. You know, I about 2 years ago, yeah, real close to 2 years ago, I went to caddy at the U.S. Senior Open for my friend Gibby Gilbert, and he made it to the field. And I get there the first day, we walk out on the range, and it was like a range of little people. It was just like Tom Kite over hitting balls and just Lanny Watkins or whoever, you know. The guys are 5'8", 5", and I go, God, it's all little people. Look what used to be in the game. Now you walk on a range on the PGA Tour, I mean, they're 6'5", 6'4", 6'3", 6'5". They're monsters are coming. The athletes are coming to the game. And on top of that, besides the athletes, just guys are so much more prepared nowadays than they used to be with just the total game, the teaching and the mental aspects. And there's just not – you don't see very many like this Matt Wolf kid or whatever his name, you don't see that anymore, but you see it with him, but you don't see guys coming out with odd swings like the old days, man. It's the training is too good. And the videos are too good. Guys come out with perfect golf swings now for the most part.
You make such a good point about the size, because I think I've injured my left shoulder from holding the microphone sort of above my head to interview these guys. I mean, guys like Jamie Lovemark and they're imposing. I mean, they look like linebackers, a bunch of these guys.
It's amazing, the athletes in the game now. It's just going to keep getting better and better. And, you know, they dropped this cut thing. What do you guys think about that? They dropped the cut thing to 65 and ties, right?
Is that ties, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm telling you, there's going to be a tournament come around soon, and it may have already happened, where you're going to be 5 shots out of the lead and gone.
I think it's happened already, to be honest with you. I mean, place like Torrey Pines where conditions are difficult and a bunch of guys are lurking around par. Yeah, the old 10-shot rule is long gone, man. I tell you what, you better be going.
There's, you know, the Tigers, what did he make, 125 in a row or something like that? That'll never be sniffed again. It just ain't happening.
Yeah, I think it was 141 in a row, which
that's far – I mean, that really and truly, that stat will hold up longer than Byron Nelson's 11 in a row, which I said is the most impossible stat in all of sporting that will never be touched. And then I remember Tiger got to like 8, and I was like, well, that's going to get too. The impossible thing's fixing to get beat. But
current record right now is Morikawa with 21, and that's one of those young guns that come out. I mean, have you watched Colin Morikawa hit it?
We've got paired with him. In fact, we played with him at Dago, and I was super impressed with his putting, and his attitude was fat, but his ball striking was, of course, it was cold and windy there, so you can't judge, but I didn't think that much of his ball hitting at the time, but it was so brutally, it was such a tough week to be playing. So obviously, if you're making 21 cuts in a row, he's doing some serious ball striking, but I just didn't get to see it the days that we got paired with him.
Mark said he's a better iron player than Tiger.
Hey, calm down, Emelman.
You literally said that.
Welcome
Mark.
To the Carl and Mark Show. This will go on the entire show, right?
That'll go on for as long as you and I have a podcast together. I will bring up that you said that Colin Morikawa is a better iron player than Tiger Woods.
Yeah, I'm the number one Tiger fan on earth, boys.
How hard would it be to caddy for Tiger Woods? I want to ask you that one.
That's a good question.
I know
you speculate, but.
I think it would be pretty easy. I think he gets it. I was shocked when you could see their kind of relationships towards the end when Tiger. Remember when Tiger hit driver on 3 at Augusta and shot it into the trees? Remember that? Y'all remember
what
that?
What year was that?
It's like 6 years ago or whatever. It was towards the end with Stevie.
Yeah, with Williams still in the bag. Yeah.
Yeah, and Tiger said, Stevie taught me to hit driver on 3. It's dumb. You know, I was like, wow, he took a shot at Steve in the press on television. I thought that was odd. But I don't think – I think Tiger's so chill and cool, and I think he'd be – and of course, obviously, your pocketbook would show, but working for Tiger I don't think would be very difficult. I really don't think it would be difficult at all.
Did you know that while over 60% of Americans dream of starting their own business, less than 20% of them take the first step? The reason? Building a business is tough. Taylor Brands is simplifying the business journey. From launching and managing to growing your business, Taylor Brands isn't just another tool. It's your online business partner from launch to success. With Taylor Brands, building your dream business becomes an effortless experience. Their comprehensive platform guides you through every step, ensuring you have everything you need in one place. From LLC formation to bookkeeping, invoicing to acquiring licenses and permits, and even setting up your bank account. Taylor Brands handles it all seamlessly. And our listeners will receive 35% off Taylor Brands LLC formation plans using our link, taylorbrands.com/CBS Sports. That's TAILORBRANDS.com/CBS Sports. So start your business journey today with Taylor Brands.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I got to ask you this question because, you know, I often interview young players and walking onto a PGA Tour range for the first time as a rookie or a youngster, and you get there and you see the Woods and the Els and the VJs and the McIlroys and company. For a young caddy walking onto the driving range, it's got to be a wild experience, isn't it? I mean,
it is.
And when you get on the course too, and then you get grouped with you won't be with them on Thursday, Friday, but something happens and all of a sudden you've got Woods in a group with you on the weekend. What does that feel like?
Well, you know what? You know what's amazing? It took me, Trevor, it took me 13 years to get Tiger pairing one time. Right. And it happened in the playoffs on a Saturday in the Cookies rookie year. It was on, let's see, it was his rookie year because it was in the playoffs and we didn't make them. So it took me 13 years to get a pair with Tiger, and that was cool. It was like the greatest day I've ever had caddying, really. Not the greatest, but it was really a special day. He walks up on the tee and sticks his hand out and goes, "Hey, Kipper." And I'm like, "You done your homework before you came over here. You don't know who the hell I am."
But surely you're walking around trying your best not to step on through lines and stuff on the greens, right? You're aware, aren't you?
No doubt. You're scared. Anytime you get like paired with VJ, you know he's this guy, this bear that walks around just intimidating the snot out of everybody. You really are. You got to be on your P's and Q's right there. And when and if I'm having to think about stuff like that, I don't caddy very good, man. There's a lot more goes on out there to carrying that bag than people think. You got to really be on your toes, you know, when you're talking and walking around and working for the other caddies and cleaning the other guys' balls and stuff.
Cleaning their balls? Easy. This is a family show, brother.
There's definitely an art to it just from having – I've played in a couple pro-ams and just having been around guys, you're like, oh, this is not – there's a ton going on. And
there's so much more going on than you see on TV, right?
It doesn't seem like it until you get out there. You're like, oh, my – it feels like things are – we always joke like things are moving quickly. Like things are moving very quickly whenever – even just like a stupid pro-am that you're playing in. I'm curious about this because this is something that Mark and I holler at each other about a lot. And – I want to get your take because I know you talk to players a ton. You're around players a ton. What is the primary measure of success that players talk about? Because I think fans look at wins and that's it. And it's like, man, so much of winning is just luck. And you talked about like getting the right breaks and whatever. So what do players talk about when they talk about success? Is it top tens? Is it made cuts? Is it strokes gained? Like what's the primary conversation there?
You mean the players delivering to us or players talking to each other or themselves or what? What are you talking? What's the question? I'm confused.
Yeah, I guess players talking to them.
I was like, trying to get you to acknowledge that strokes gained is a really important thing.
No, I just mean like players talking to each other. Like, what do they consider to be a successful season? Is it they were ranked this high in strokes gained? Is it money earned? Is it what is it?
I think it's two things. It's money earned and wins. I think there's nothing else that matters, really. I mean, I'm no stat guy whatsoever. And stats are exactly this, that, stats. We pair with at the Honda, we got paired with Luke Donald. And, you know, it's just like a month ago. And Luke Donald's got it over number 8 green. He's hit something, a flyer, wrong club, whatever. He's over 8 green, and the pin's cut back against him. And I'm sitting there looking at him, and I look over at the scoreboard, and it says Luke Donald is 82nd from this distance on the PGA Tour. And I go, I bump Stewart. I go, there's why you don't look at stats. You can look at stats and gain some knowledge out of them, but that's crap. You know, the guy's got to be top 5 easy. And then he had another spot on 10 where he'd missed the green, and he's pitching, and it said he's – in the middle of the field from this distance, you know, it's like he was 150th from this distance off the green. And I go, God, that means he's like 150. They said he's average. And so I said, that means there's 150 guys better than Luke Donald from this, because they count like 300 guys, right? And those stats. So stats are overrated. I know you can, the smart people argue with me, but it's about money and wins. And for me, it's just wins, believe it or not. I'm as dumb as I am. And as broke as I am, all I talk about with Stuart Sink is how can we win? What do we got to do to win, win, win? You know, and the way he plays the game, he's a cut. We've only missed one cut in 9 events. So he's made 8 out of 9 cuts. He's a cut-making machine. And you would think I'd be all about that, but it's not. For me, there's just something about just winning golf tournaments. That's all that matters to me.
Kyle is handsome and smart.
Are you cackling, Mark? Mark thinks that
there's one thing I'm going to say this, Kip. The bottom right block on the scorecard is the most important thing there is, right?
Hold on. Mark thinks that FedEx Cup points are like a legitimate currency. Like he thinks that you can like buy stock with FedEx Cup points. So well,
you got a bunch of them. You effectively can. They translate to dollars.
I wish they would go back to dollars. I don't like keeping points race. Do you? I like the dollar sitting there. Don't you? Isn't that a better way of doing it?
I like dollars because we're gonna keep the money anyway. So we might as well just use that for everything.
Yeah, keeping the FedEx. You got 3 FedEx points. Who cares? You know,
if you got 3 FedEx points, it wasn't a very good week.
How many numbers are left of that comma? That's important.
Who's the guy out there that you have been paired with or that you've just watched or whatever, and you're like, man, that guy's underrated. Like, people don't know how good he is. Like, there's a misperception of what people think he is versus how good he actually is.
Charlie Hoffman, of course, you know, the guy's up there a lot, and is, but really and truly, that guy hasn't won more golf tournaments is mind-blowing to me, because, I mean, you go out with Charlie, it's nailed, and it's a little tiny cut every time, and his short game is dynamite, and his stroke is dynamite, and I'm like, why ain't that guy winning golf tournaments? So now, the last couple of years, he's really been up there a lot. You know, he still's not winning, but he's up there a lot, so he's getting recognized as such a great, but the, you know, when he first got out there on tour, God, he was, I'm like, this guy's the best. And he wasn't showing it in those days. But I mean, think about if there's any other great underachievers out there.
Great underachievers.
there's a bunch of them. I can't think of them right off, but I talk about it all the time to my player. But we talk, players and caddies talk about each other, players' games. And
yeah,
and there's a lot goes on.
What about just like the nicest guy that you've been paired with? I won't ask the opposite of these questions, but just somebody that people might not be aware of, that he's just a good dude. Like, he's just fun to play with, fun to be out there with and be paired with.
You know, Ernie is tough on his caddies, and it's quietly nailing his caddies, so a lot of people don't get to hear it. He's tough on his guy, but there's nobody cooler to go out with than Ernie. Ernie's as chill as he can be, but there's so many nice, I mean, we just played with Pebble with somebody. This is, of course, I love going out with Mickelson, man. I think he's one of the best guys to go out with. You know, he talks a lot, and I guess the players don't want to talk to him as much, so he'll talk to the caddies a lot. I love going out with that dude, man. He's the best. He's always, that guy, he'll come by and he'll say your name, and I mean, that guy's on top of his game, you know. A lot of the players, you know, don't care for him, but and think he's fake. But I love the guy.
What grinds your gears the most? I mean, what as a caddy when you're out there, have you got like a pet peeve that players or other caddies will get up to that bothers you?
You know, my pet peeve, any guy that's nasty to his caddy consistently, that's really grinds my gears. You know, I get it. If you're caddying and your guy's wanting information and you give it to him and you send him over the green or whatever, you're going to get nailed. It's part of the job. But for a guy who's constantly, I see some of these guys, and if the fans heard it, it would blow. I won't call out any names, but man, I can think of 20, 30 guys right off. Nah, not that many. 10 guys that are just brutal to their caddy, just brutal. There's one top name guy that the fans love that just treats his guy like crap, and I just can't stand the guy because of it.
I'm gonna have to get that name after we're done recording here.
Yeah, okay. Cal's gonna be saying, look, he's careful because he's a journalist. He's a reporter.
It's all off the record. I mean, this is on the record, but everything else is off the record.
Off the record. I got some great stories.
But what's the rule, Kipper? Like left and right, that's the players' deal, long and short is the caddies' deal, right?
I think so. Yeah, it is a little bit.
Well, I appreciate you being with us, Matt. You got so many great stories, and you're such a riot on social media. Before we let you go, Big Guy, one more story, because golfers right now, everyone's cooped up with themselves, and there's no PGA Tour golf, no golf around the place, and everyone's just aggravated. So lighten the mood with just one more story.
Goodness, I have I think Benji, the caddy, you know, caddies for Thompson, Lexi Thompson, he's my buddy, but he's my biggest fan too. The guy gets me gigs telling stories and stuff all the time, but I got to fly by the seat of my pants. My best story, we could do a podcast on my best story, but it takes about 5 minutes, and it's funny.
We got time, go ahead.
5 minutes, you want me to tell my story?
Jake, we're good. Jake's nodding. Let's go.
Yeah, do it. Let's go.
So 100 years ago, I'm a club pro. I was a club pro for almost 25 years. So 100 years ago, when I was a young kid playing, this guy at my club, he played college golf. I was still in high school. He said he had a bad crick in his neck at the golf tournament. He said he went to the trainer. The trainer popped his neck, and it went away. And I used to get cricks all the time in my neck, you know, two or three times a year. And I mean, there's no golf for like 3 days when they came on. So I got this huge money match set up in Crossville, Tennessee. I wake up in the morning and I've got a crick. I mean, I am paralyzed. So I can't miss this. We got the biggest suckers coming into town. We're going to rob them. I know I'm going to make some money. I'm playing great. So Sissy, you know, the greenskeeper, she gives me two tiny muscle relaxers, okay? So I take one instantly, and I said, I'm going to go try and play. I'm like this, you know. I don't think I can even swing. So I start heading out. I leave early enough to go eat breakfast and stuff, and I'm going to get there in time to hit balls. And I start thinking, hey, back when I was a kid, the guy said, chiropractor popped his neck. I'm going to bust right into this chiropractor. The game's like at noon. This is like 10 o'clock, but I'm in a hurry. I go busting into the chiropractor's office, okay? I go walking in there, and I say, hey, I'd love to see the chiropractor real fast. You know, I have a crick in my neck. And she says, here, you have to fill out this paperwork first. I go, crap. So I pull the thing over. I fill it out. You got blood in your urine. Blah, blah, no, no, no. Are you allergic? No, no, no. Run it back up there to her. You know, I'm in a hurry. She goes, did you fill out the other side? I'm like, yank it back. So I go fill out the other side and run it back up there. I said, oh, I just got a crick in my neck. I just want to see the doc lady pop my neck. She goes, okay, so we'll be with you in a few minutes. I'm watching my watch. So finally, see, Calvin Henley, come back here. So I go back there, and nurse goes over the chart with me again. I'm like, I just filled it out. Yes, it's all accurate. That's it. So I need to see the doctor. I got a crick in my neck. I need to pop. Finally, the doctor walks in. So I'm sitting there on the examination table. He comes walking in, and he goes, hey, what's up, Calvin? I said, you know, I was in high school. My buddy had a crick and popped his trainer, pops his neck. I got a crick, and I've got a golf match, and I was kind of hoping you'd pop my neck and let me take off play golf. He goes, well, let's check you out. And I thought, okay, we're finally getting somewhere, you know. So he says, lay down on the table. He goes down to the bottom of the table. He puts his legs out. And he goes, just as I thought. I said, what? He goes, you got one leg longer than the other. And I said, what? I said, I have a crick in my neck. He goes, yeah, but you got a crick in your neck because you push your leg longer enough, puts pressure on your back. So that's why you got a crick in your neck. I said, I was kind of hoping you'd just pop my neck and I'd take off. He goes, nah, we'll do some therapy on you. So I said, oh, crap. So I lay down on the – he said, just lay down right here on this thing, and it's like a massage table. You know, you got your head in that crack. And so I'm laying there, and he goes, we're going to put some these heat packs on you. So then I'm looking at the nurse opens up this metal thing, and smoke comes billowing out of there. You know, she pulls out these hot packs, these heavy hot packs, puts them on my back. And I kind of turn around and say, yeah, I got a crick in my neck. My back feels great. You know, this will loosen up. It's the whole thing. You know, you got to do that. Okay. So I'm laying there looking through that crack, looking at my watch under that crack under the table. And so I sit there 15 minutes. Like, oh, my God, I'm going to miss my tea time now. I'm not going to get their balls. So finally the doctor comes walking there. He goes, how you feeling? I go, my neck hurts like crazy. My back feels great, you know. He goes, well, we're going to put some electrical currents on there, and that'll help you loosen up. And I start saying, electrical currents? I got water dripping off my back, electricity, water, no. So he says, we'll do this. And so he puts these electrodes on there. So I'm I'm laying there on this. Oh, I cut you off. Did I lose you?
No, you got to keep going. We got you.
So I'm laying there on this table. Can you see me?
Oh, I can see you, but talk loud.
So I'm laying there on this table, and he pulls these electrodes on my back. So I'm laying there like this right here, and he goes, now I turn these things on. He goes, tell me if it becomes uncomfortable. So he puts them right under the heat pack under the water. I'm like, God, this is crazy. So I'm laying there. He turns it on, and involuntarily, all of a sudden, my right arm goes zap up and down. I go, uncomfortable, uncomfortable. And he goes, oh, man, I had that thing on high. Sorry. He turns it back down. So I'm laying there, and zap, this arm goes up, and then it sits there for about a second, and then it drops back down. So I'm sitting there with this thing up for 10 minutes. I'm looking, trying to watch it zap, pull my arm back under, trying to see my watch. I can't see it. He comes walking back in, and he goes, how you feeling? Like 15 minutes later, I go, man, my back feels great. I have this crick that's killing me. So finally, you know, he stretches me out on the table and rocks around there behind me. And I'm just sitting there relaxed, you know, feel like Gumby. I got the muscle relaxers kicking in. And all of a sudden he goes, crack. I'm like, oh, good God, that hurts so bad. And he goes, how you feeling? But anyway, so I get up and, you know, it was like 1988 or something. I get up and hand him $40 and walk out there like, oh, thanks a million, bud. Yeah, is this the worst thing ever? But
and you still got one leg shorter than the other in the cricket.
I think my legs match, believe it or not. I don't think he's full of crap. That's my golf story. It's a long one.
Did you win the match?
Did you win the match?
Honest to God, so I walk out, handing my $40. You know, I walk out there like Frankenstein, and I pop the other muscle relaxer on the way to the thing. I don't got time to hit balls, but it's at a 9-hole little rink-a-dink golf course. And I played 36 holes with no bogeys that day. Just absolutely robbed those guys. So it was a great day.
What a super story.
It's a long one.
That's amazing.
Carl, I can't talk. You go, Carl.
You can't. I think that's all we got.
there's nothing to that. You can't top that. I mean,
I don't know how to segue that. Yeah, for sure. Kip, thanks for your time, man. You can follow Kip on Twitter at Kip Henley. And we will be back, I believe, later this week, Friday, I think, with some more content. We're gonna keep diving into the archives. We're gonna keep handing out awards. We might have a regular segment with Kip. Who knows how this is gonna go and when we're gonna be back with golf. But Kip, appreciate
you. I'm doing nothing else, boys. So you can have me on. I'm sitting here bored to tears.
That's kind of where we're all at. So thanks for your time again, and thanks to everybody for listening to the First Cut Podcast.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Appreciate you.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.